We've been going through a journey of our own. We've been looking at the long way round. Now, this is Jesus travelling to Jerusalem. And this evening's talk is called Seek and Save. And you can go on the Metro website and find all the ones that we've already looked at if you've missed them. But as we've been following Jesus' journey to Jerusalem and ultimately to the cross, we've sort of hit three major points through our three talks. And the first of that being, the best way to get to know someone is to go on a long journey with them. And this is what we see Jesus and his disciples, and in fact many other people doing as they're heading towards Jerusalem. They're spending about 3 months together. And it's actually a journey that could take 3 days if you do it directly. But they're going the long way around. The second major point was Exodus. Now, the Israelites had their exodus out of Egypt to the promised land, but now we see Jesus doing his exodus to bring people to the world according to Jesus, God's kingdom. And that is the third major point. The whole thing about this is bringing people into God's kingdom. And we're seeing this journey through the eyes of a man called Luke. A very well-educated man, and he's studying and researching Jesus' journey for the benefit of those who are wanting to know, is what Jesus says about himself really true? This is what I've heard really true. Can I really believe this? And the story that we're going to be looking at, you might actually know it quite well. It's about a man who is quite short. You probably heard it in Sunday school quite a bit, but it starts like this. Jesus entered Jericho as was passing through. He was passing through Jericho. Now, if we look at the map, we'll see that Jericho is just to the northeast of Jerusalem. It is on the main route from the north down to Jerusalem and beyond. If you are going to Jerusalem, you will go through Jericho. Now, Jericho itself is quite unique, actually, in its placing in the world. It is one of the lowest places on earth. It's about 250 metres below sea level in its own little valley in between two deserts. And its name actually means fragrant. It was well known for its amazing floral arrangements and palm trees and growth. And because of this little microclimate it's got being so low, it was the winter holiday destination of choice. This is the Saint-Tropez of the ancient world. This is where you went if you had money, if you were good looking, if you were a celebrity, and to show off, you would go here for your winter's holiday to get away from the nasty cold weather. Herod actually built a rather large play palace there. You can have a look at it online, what's left of it anyway. And Saint-Tropez was where the money was. This was the place to be. Everyone had a modified chariot being pulled by a red horse or a yellow bull. Every party was massive. Every bar was packed. Everyone was beautiful. And the food was amazing. This place was money central. It was fantastic. And Jesus is passing through it on the way to Jerusalem. Now, he's not just on his own with his little band of disciples. He's actually traveling with thousands of other people, 50,000, 100,000 people, because the Passover festival is coming. This is their big festival. But this year is particularly special. This Passover is slightly different because they all know that Jesus is with them. And in their minds, they are going to march into Jerusalem, a massive entry. Jesus is going to be crowned their king, and they're going to kick out the Roman rulers. They're all saying, I'm going to be there this year. I'm going to see Jesus do that this year. I'm going to be able to say, you know, last year I was there with Jesus. I saw all this happen. Now, Jerusalem was a big city in those days. It was massive. It was 30,000 people. Granted, by today's standard, that's a large village, but a large village in those days was like 10, 20 people. So this is, you're going big. And at the time of the Passover, this population could go 6 times bigger. It could really explode. And you've got all these people migrating to Jerusalem for the Passover. It is going to be full. I was trying to think, what is sort of the example of today? It would be like everyone that lives in London taking a long weekend in Yate. Suddenly everyone just goes over there. Suddenly there's no parking, no food everywhere. There's definitely no room in any inn anywhere. And it's totally ram-packed. And that's what's going to happen at this Passover meeting. And as we're passing through Jericho, we meet our main character. It says, a man was there by the name of Zacchaeus. He was a chief tax collector and was wealthy. Now, this isn't the first time a tax collector has been mentioned in the Bible. Matthew was a tax collector, and Jesus is well known for wining and dining and partying with tax collectors. He's well known for that. But the reason why there's tax collectors at the moment is because the Romans were very business-minded. They were very business-minded. What they would do is they would see your country, your city, and go, I want that, and attack you, take it over, decide to rule you, and then to say thank you for conquering them and ruling them, you had to pay them for the joy of that happening. So they would tax you and tax you and tax you, and they would have tax collectors doing all this for you. And the way they did it was they would lease out almost different areas of the country. So Jericho would have bids placed for it if you wanted to tax that area, and the highest bidder got the rights to tax it. And as long as the Romans got what they wanted, they didn't care how much you taxed anybody. If someone owed a tenner, you could tax them 20 and take half. That wasn't a problem. That was your profit. And this is why we see tax collectors aren't really liked that much, and understandably so, I think. I think we'd all agree on that. But this is the first time we see a chief tax collector mentioned. A chief tax collector is the big don. He is the Scarface of the drug world. He is the stringer bell of the wire. He is running it all from some dark, dingy office behind a bar he owns, sending out all his heavies around the city, picking up money, maybe killing the old person if they didn't do it, taking the furniture if they couldn't pay. He's that guy. He is not a nice guy. He's a gangster, by all accounts. A total gangster. But he's made his money by ripping off his own people. But we see, actually, he isn't everything he shows. We see something deeper in him, because it says, next, he wanted to see who Jesus was. But because he was short, he could not see over the crowd. So he ran ahead and climbed a sycamore fig tree to see him, since Jesus was coming that way. He wanted to see Jesus. This man, who was very powerful, very influential probably, wanted to see Jesus. He'd heard rumours about this man and knew he was coming and knew there was something special about him. And he wanted to see him. Now, he's probably not alone in not being able to see. I mean, probably a third of the people there couldn't see, could they? There's thousands of people there. If you're under the average, you ain't seeing anything. And so he's one of everybody else who couldn't see. But he decides to make something out of this. He's going to see Jesus. He's going to see him. And he runs ahead of Jesus to a tree, fig tree, to climb it up. Now, Zacchaeus is a wealthy man. He is probably quite highly influencing. And to run actually is not the done thing for someone of his status. To pull up your clothes and run is not the done thing. But you can imagine, this is how it looks in my head anyway. Imagine thousands of people on a road. He's got his heavies around him, protecting him in a little sort of circle. And he says, I've got to get up there. I've got to go ahead. And so his boys goes, okay, fine. Form a little scrum. And you just see them barging through, palming off the old lady in the face. A kid goes over the furniture over there. And it's manic. It's like a scene from Asterix and Obelix, if you know what that is, with kids going everywhere as they're piling on through. And he's battling his way through, sort of as the rugby ball in the middle, getting his way through until they get to a tree, and then they chuck him up there and form a little circle around it. And they must be thinking, what's happened to Zacchaeus? He's off his rocker. This guy just embarrassed himself totally by running and now going in a tree. What's going on? And everybody else who knows who Zacchaeus is and knows his reputation as quite a dangerous man has just seen what he's done. And this tells us something quite important about Zacchaeus, which is he's willing to sacrifice his reputation in that manner to see Jesus. It is vitally important to him to see Jesus that he's willing for people to laugh at him for running, laugh at him for doing something that a kid does of climbing up a tree. That's not the done thing. And it also tells us that maybe he's actually, you know, a bit lost inside. He's willing to do this because he's you know, something's not right. I've got to see Jesus. There must be something in him. He's sort of lost. Maybe he doesn't like the reputation he's got. I wasn't meant to be like this. I was just in it to earn some money. And like him, I mean, maybe some of you guys can also relate to being lost. I know there are two definite times when I was lost. There's been many more, but two which are easy to sum up. And they're summed up by two nicknames I got given. The first was when I was a lot younger, before university, I went to a all-boys Christian youth group called Urban Saints Guildford Crusaders. It was rough and tumble. It was fighting each other all the time, but learning about God at the same time. Fantastic for any young guy. But I got given, humbly bestowed on me, the nickname of HMS Destroyer. Now, in your head, this might be summing up what I might have been like. I was the one who would go too far in a bundle, probably, to win. I had to win. I was the one in British Bulldog who would batter out the eight-year-olds out of the way and get tackled by 10, 20 leaders, and it'd take them half an hour to get me out. I would fight till the very last. Or in a wide game, I would have a tire over my shoulder burst out of the bushes and hear, oh no, Alex is coming, help, help, help. I was that guy. But the problem was, I couldn't even lose a bundle to a 10-year-old. Like one, I couldn't even fake the loss because I had this reputation. I was scared to lose it. But I was really lost. I wanted to be able to see the look on his face if a little 10-year-old beat me. You know, I wanted to see that happiness, but I couldn't let it happen. And then my second nickname, you might see a common theme with me here, is when I went to university, I got the nickname Angry Alex. Angry Alex. Now, I was very open about going to church. I was very open about my faith. And to have the nickname Angry Alex doesn't really help the situation. And I was well known for punching my own computer screen, lobbing the screwdriver across the lab if I couldn't get it to work properly, getting involved in fights, which I had nothing to do with, so I didn't get in trouble. I wasn't the best behaved person. And I again got a nickname which I didn't like. I didn't want this nickname. I again wanted to be gentle. I wanted to show like what I really was inside, but it just never came about. I was lost. And maybe yourself here, maybe you guys, someone here has got a reputation which you just wish you didn't have, and you don't know quite how to get rid of it. Maybe life isn't quite adding up how you thought it would. Or you've made a few decisions and it's all gone wrong, and now you're sort of left in a muddle. And maybe you've been chasing spirituality for a while and chasing God and trying different things, and now you're finally here and just hoping and praying there's something really in church, something really in this God. And maybe you're like Zacchaeus, who's just up a tree, just looking and hoping, just looking and hoping. But let me tell you something. Jesus is always looking for you, no matter how far away you feel, no matter how lost you feel. Jesus is always looking for you. And we see this is the same case with Zacchaeus. It says, when Jesus reached the spot, he looked up and said to him, Zacchaeus, come down immediately. I must stay at your house today. So he came down at once and welcomed him gladly. Remember, Jesus is surrounded by thousands of people all migrating through this city. There's probably a lot of people up a lot of things they probably shouldn't be up. So he's just one of many people up trees, lampposts and things. And so Jesus picks him out of everybody. He's people are trying to get his attention the whole time. They want to say they've seen him. But he spots him. He spots him and stops. And you can imagine everybody else suddenly stopping with him. Thousands of people trying to stop. And he says, Zacchaeus. First thing he says, he doesn't say, what are you doing up the tree? He says, Zacchaeus. Now, this is really important. In the ancient world, names are so important, especially biblical names. It's so important because a parent would name their child with all their desires, all their hopes upon that child would be in that name. And so here we see him saying his name. I don't know what some of your names are, but my full name is Alexander Mackenzie Byrne. I think it sounds quite good. And my son is Roman Mackenzie Byrne. Mackenzie is my Scottish clan, and that only goes down the male line, so it's quite an honour to have that. But my name, I'm not quite sure whether my parents actually thought about the meaning, like, yes, this is what my son is going to be, because it means defender of men. Now, that is a tall order for anybody, I think. Defender of men. That is going to be quite a high task. And I hope I hope I've lived up to it in some way. But for Zacchaeus, what does his name mean? Does it mean glorious leader? Does it mean that? Does it mean good at business? Does it mean mighty warrior? Does it mean funny? It actually means pure. Pure. Now, I do wonder whether Zacchaeus actually wanted people to know that, because pure the gangster doesn't really go together. So I could imagine him sort of trying to hush that up. But what we see here is Jesus spotting Zacchaeus and calling him pure. This gangster, this mobster who has killed people, who's ripped everybody off, he calls him pure. Now, he's used to not being called by his name. He's used to many other four-letter words, five-letter words that are quite hurtful. That's what he's used to. And now everyone's stopped, and it's Chinese whispers going back through the crowd. What's going on? Who's Jesus talking to? He's talking to the local gangster. Why is he talking to him? He didn't even talk to me. I was standing right next to him. He didn't even say hi. And so they're all muttering away, and it goes on to say this. All the people saw this and began to mutter, he has gone to be the guest of a sinner. This is what everyone thought of Zacchaeus. This sinner. He's gone to be the guest of this man. He's gone to the house. He's gone to eat the food. He's gone to pat the dog. All made from the money of ripping his own people off. In the eyes of the religious people, Jesus is now unclean because he's spending his time with an unclean person. But probably he was always unclean in their eyes anyway. And to everybody else, it looks like he's condoning Zacchaeus' behaviour by spending time with him. If this was today, there would be a media frenzy right now. It would be going crazy. They would be trying to get him to apologise for spending time with him, distance himself from them, try to get him to quit whatever job he had. It would be going crazy right now if this was today. But Jesus spends time with this gangster, because we see next, you see the result. It says, but Zacchaeus stood up and said to the Lord, look, Lord, here and now I give half of my possessions to the poor. And if I've cheated anybody out of anything, I will pay back four times the amount. Jesus has only said, Zacchaeus, come down from the tree. I need to spend time with you. He hasn't gone to his house yet. They're still in front of everybody. He hasn't taken him around the corner, popped him on the naughty step and like told him off about how he's living. He hasn't done any of that. All he said is his name and invited him down and said, I must spend time with you. And what's happened to Zacchaeus? His mind and heart has changed. No longer is he this hardcore gangster who's hoarding everything himself and will do anything to earn more money. But he gives it away. And look how much he's giving away. He's giving away four times the amount that he owed and others. But this doesn't just mean he's giving away a load of money. He won't be able to go on a summer holiday or buy the yacht he wanted. This means he's going to be giving away his lifestyle. He's giving away so much. His lifestyle is going to go. How he lives is going to go. His nice chariot is going to go. His influence is probably going to go. Who the circles that he stays in are probably going to disappear. He's actually losing far more than just financial. All because Jesus spent that brief second and saw him and said, come down. Zacchaeus was seeking Jesus, and Jesus found him and changed his heart and mind instantly. And this is amazing because it shows us really the best way to have money, doesn't it? We try and get rich people and people with money to give money by luring them into it. But actually, we see here Jesus sets the perfect model. He changed the heart and mind to be good to give. I want to give back. I need to give four times back what I took. He changes the heart and mind. It's incredible. In those little words that he said, it's incredible. And now we start to see why Luke, and only Luke, has this story in here, because it tells us so much about what Jesus is here to do. Because it says, Jesus said to him, today salvation has come to this house, because this man too is a son of Abraham, for the Son of Man came to seek and to save the lost. To seek and to save the lost. This is what Jesus is all about. They're meant to be travelling all the way to Jerusalem. They're not stopping. But he stops and stops everybody else for this one man. He stops everything. Because to save this man who is seeking him is the important thing right now. I want to say hi to this guy. I want to see him saved. I want to see the seeker found. And this is what Jesus is all about. And in front of everyone, he reminds everyone who's traveling with him that Zacchaeus is like all of you. He's from the same stock as you are. He is a son of Abraham. He is from the same person as you are. Much like we are here, we are all sons of God. And the Father is just looking for his kids. God is looking for his sons and daughters to come back to him. He's always seeking for us. And if my son Roman were to disappear, I would be doing the Liam Neeson Taken film to the full to find him. I would not stop until I found my son. Jesus is the same. He wants to find you. He wants you to let him find you. And this brings us to our big idea. Nothing excludes you from getting to know Jesus, no matter how lost you feel. That's nothing excludes you from getting to know Jesus, no matter how lost you feel. No matter how far away you are, no matter how your life has turned out, no matter what's gone on, doesn't exclude you from getting to know Jesus. Jesus just wants to know you. He wants you to allow him to find you. He wants you to allow him to find you. There's not going to be a telling off. There's no need to be scared of what Jesus is going to say. He's going to say, "Welcome back. I've missed you." He's not going to tell you off. And this evening, maybe some of you here at that point where you're like, "I want to find Jesus. I do." And so it's very easy actually to find Jesus. There's no forms to fill out, no health checks to be done. It's a simple prayer to find Jesus. That's all it is. And actually, as the band come up now, in my head, I'm going to say a prayer. And if you want to join in with that, say it in your own head and join along with it. This is inviting Jesus into your life because he wants to find you. He wants you to find him. And if you do say that prayer, come tell someone. Tell someone up here. Tell Philip. Tell the person you've come with. Let someone know. But the prayer goes like this. It goes, "Father God, thank you that you've been looking for me. Thank you that you've always been looking for me. And I thank you that you want to find me. I'm sorry for the way my life has gone, but I want to find you. So I invite you into my life." Amen.